Okay, this is the continuation from yesterday's chat. We discussed many things, including virtual memory, humanware competition, and so forth. I hope this is going to be a more productive chat from than yesterday. Yesterday, me and Alex and Derek were the only participants. Today, we have Tom, Scott, and others who are here. So, welcome, everybody. The chat is now officially open for discussion. So, who will be the first person to fire up the first question?
Oh, I can't believe no one else has been able to duplicate this, but as of 7.5 build 20, every time I try to detach any sort of document, whether it's right after a reset or with any memory settings, my brain load just freezes up completely.
You're talking about detaching a file from a message?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's what sort of document it is. I've tried a little tiny text file, I've tried a Word file, and it shouldn't make a difference, and it doesn't seem to. It freezes up no matter what.
Okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and check that out. I'd get the LA Times by email from the NFB Newsline, so I just got one of those yesterday. So I'll see if I can detach that, and if it, if I can duplicate that particular problem. Yeah, I'll do that while you guys are doing your thing. Hold on.
Also, Joseph, I never got your debug log. Well, I got the email, but and it said I had the attachment, but Hotmail didn't let me view it. It just says this message contains attachments, and it had the file. I don't remember what it was. There was no download link or anything, so.
Okay, in this case, do you want me to put the text file as the part of the email message?
I was wondering maybe if you could post it somewhere, because email, Hotmail always it likes to save things in mobile, and as far as I know, there's no way to change that. But
do you have any other email addresses that I might use?
Well, I'm kind of thinking about getting Gmail, but not at the moment.
I haven't forgotten about invites. Tom, are you there? I thought you were in the GPS chat.
I'm here in this room, behind Cooltech.
Okay. So, any other things? So, did anybody confirm the UEB bug that exists? Or if you go to the third item on the miscellaneous mathematical symbols, the exception is thrown?
Can you repeat that? I couldn't quite get what it was. Just there was other stuff in the background. So.
Sorry about that. Did any of you have managed to reproduce that same bug that many people experienced regarding UEB table, where if you go to third item under miscellaneous math symbols, it will throw an exception, and UEB will be closed. The other thing that I found out is that once it is closed, you cannot get it back unless you perform a reset.
Yeah, I found that, as I said a little earlier when almost nobody was here, Kevin Chow emailed me and said that that'd been reported to Humanware, so it'll be fixed in the next, what's the word, upgrade, there we go. So that's been cataloged.
I'm not too.
Okay, I'm back. I just detached four files from the yesterday's issue of the LA Times that I got from NFB Newsline, and I was able to detach all of those files and put them in a newspaper folder on my PC card. And as soon as I had attached all those files, I went right back to the message I was reading, and then I got out of Keymail. I had no lockup whatsoever.
Guess I'm just lucky. I don't know what the problem is. As I said, it started after 7.5.2.20. I tried to detach a DOCX file, and that's the first time it locked up, and it's never worked since. Really strange, but I don't know what else I can do about it. Oh well. I don't really mind copying out of Keymail slash attachments, it's just sort of inconvenient.
Is the file extraordinarily large?
No, it's been everything from a little TXT file to someone's I don't know, maybe 3.5 page essay in Word 97. It was just...
So, was it in the... Was it a particular file type, or did it happen when the file exceeded a certain amount of limit?
No, they've all been small. It's happened with a .txt, a .doc, and a .docx. I don't mean just three files. I mean there have been several .docs and .docx's that it's happened with. I don't quite know what's going on with it, but it doesn't seem to be related to the size of the file or the type of the file.
What about where you're detaching the file to? Is it are you putting it on the flash disk or on a PC card or a CF card?
I can't get even there. I'll go down to the attachment. I'll hit enter. It'll say detach or read. If I hit R for read, it works beautifully, and it returns me to the attachment, you know, just like it should. But as soon as I hit D, as soon as I hit D for detach, it says attachment is a whatever. Detach is a keyword file, just as it always does. As soon as I say no, then it locks up completely, and I have to reset to get it back. I haven't tried saying yes, though. I might give that a shot, but I don't want to convert them. I want to leave them as they are. So that's when it happens. You hit D, then you hit N, and it freezes.
Have you tried deleting temporary files and all that kind of stuff before doing that?
I've not tried a 456 reset yet. I can do that right now, actually. Braylon's sitting right in front of me. I can give that a try. Just sort of been avoiding it just because I don't like doing 456 resets if I don't have to, but... I'll try that right now as soon as I'm done writing this email.
Actually, what I was talking about was going into KeyWeb and going into where it says, the managing of temporary internet files. I don't know if that would have anything to do with it, but just a thought.
Something too. If the flash disk or KeySaw system disk is like really, really, really low in like available space, it does that. It doesn't lock up for me, but sometimes it gives like this weird exception or not exception. Like one time I tried to connect to the internet, and with every configuration, it would beep, like the error beep, and it would say the operation you completed successfully, and it would put me in a totally blank page. I eventually figured out I had like a huge wave file in the memory plus folder that was taking up all the, except like 270 or so kilobytes free of disk space.
No, my key, start that one over. My KeySaw system disk isn't that full. Not quite sure what it is right now, but I know it's not below 85 or 90%. Another thing though with 7.5, I'm surprised isn't fixed. I just got this error as I was trying to reply to an email on the Brownload list. It's still doing that thing where it tosses a control character on the end of it. It now says the error is unbalanced. Error sending email 553.5.0.0 brownloadlist.humanware.com .. unbalanced, right parenthesis, and then a hard return, which I can only see as a character 10. Because hard returns and tabs don't seem to show up in CE messages. But I'm just surprised that isn't fixed by now.
Hi, Chaitan.
Yeah.
Okay. So probably the best way is to go to Outbox, see the email in question, and usually it adds some kind of control character to it. We discussed that in the first chat. Delete the email address in question and retype the email address. Press Enter, Escape. Then YN, ready to send an email, save a copy, and so forth, and it'll be sent the next time. The other thing that I received was email error 451, access temporarily suspended. And the best way that I know that fixed it was to wait for about 2 hours and send it again, and it was sent.
I've never gotten a 451, but yeah, I know how to fix the control character problem. I'm just surprised that it wasn't addressed. I mean, it seems like a simple enough thing. But oddly enough, it only seems to happen to the Brimlet list address. I think I saw it once or twice to another list. I don't know, it was like the bookport list or GPS list or something like that. But I've never had it happen to any of the email addresses I've got saved in my address list, strangely enough.
Hello guys, this is Armando, and I just barely came in through and hope I fixed my mic problem.
Yep, you sound fine now.
Yeah, it sounds great over here.
Elijah fixed your problem there.
Well, I just got a new computer, and I downgraded from Vista to XP, and I thought my microphone in front would work, but apparently it didn't. So I had to disconnect my speakers, and now I guess we're in business.
Yep. Probably, here we go. I've seen that once with the blind Cortex list the other day, and it went away when I went to the outbox, found the email in question, deleted the one with the control characters, and retyped the BCT at love to be a blindie.net, I believe. And then it went away. Okay, any other things to throw out? Okay, what are your opinions on the memory usage on the KeySoft 7.5? We made a conclusion that it is still stable in terms of memory usage. But I found that although it's stable in terms of KeyWeb, it seems that whenever IE is open, it refuses to close, even the KeyStuff component is closed.
And too, that the Brown Note is using extra virtual memory when it could be using physical memory too. Like, I think you put it out, it would say maybe you have 20% or so, I think it was, remaining in virtual memory, but you have like 60% in physical, so.
Other thing, when you restart the Braille Note, you think it dumps all the virtual memory and everything's clear and set to go, but your physical memory is almost completely free, yet somehow KeySoft, just running fresh from a simple reset, is taking up, 46 or something like that, percent of virtual memory, so they could dump a lot of that into physical memory, I think. I'm not quite sure how that all works, but basically, memory really needs to be fixed. And I think a CE upgrade would take care of a lot of that, just by default.
That too, and you can dump all that into 2 gigabytes of virtual memory.
Then we get into hardware upgrades, but if they're going to do that, they should do a lot at once to make it worth the money. But we can expand to 2 gigs of memory and all that stuff on a mobile device. That'd definitely be a big, huge edge over all the competition devices. No one has 2 gigs of memory in the blindness community, at least as far as I know.
That would be awesome because my Bluetooth keeps dropping when I use my Holux receiver with the GPS, even when I try to do repair inactive.
That's odd. I mean, I assume you're using 7.5 build 20. And every time I use my Blue Logger, it works fine. The receiver's not the greatest, and the Holux is a whole lot better yet. Ever since 7.5, it seems like the Blue Loggers have been doing better as far as staying paired than the Holux, which is really quite odd.
I'm using 7.247.
It's even stranger, I don't know. I've never heard of any issues with 7.2 in pairing with GPS receivers. But in general, as it was explained a while ago by, I think, Joseph, basically HumanWare had to start from the ground up in building their Bluetooth stack for CE 4.2 because there is no native support. So every Bluetooth functionality you see in the Braille Note has been made by HumanWare from the ground up. I guess in that they did a pretty good job considering they had nothing to start with and they had to make CE accept it even though it wasn't meant to in the first place. But if they do upgrade, then we'll get not only increased stability but file exchanging and audio support through Bluetooth as well. Which would be great for, you know, Bluetooth headset. Then you just have everything direct through your Braille Note's Bluetooth, and there's no need for a dongle and all this stuff.
Something that I kind of thought of too as more support for things. This doesn't have much to do with Bluetooth, but this came up in an MSN conversation a few days ago, along with Bluetooth. Having more support for MIDI. People don't know that it does have some, just like kind of barely there support for MIDI. but it's really MIDI, for one, is very, very quiet. You can't turn the MIDI volume up very much. When you try to go through a MIDI file, like in percentages or whatever, or just pressing the cursor keys, it can't really figure that out. It tries, it sometimes it goes back to the beginning, sometimes it just sits there. And then besides the synthesizer that they're using or whatever, it sounds like really, really low quality. I don't know. And then it can't sometimes keep the beats very well. You know, if the drums like get really, really out of touch. You know.
I've never tried extensive use of MIDI, but I have noticed what you're saying. The audio quality is quiet, and using the touch cursor keys above the Braille display to move it around inside a MIDI file doesn't work at all. Plus, even though it's recognized in the media player, I don't think you can hit enter from directory and have it start playing. Media player will present MIDI files, which are .mid for anyone who doesn't know. But I am pretty sure directory won't work with them.
Yeah, it won't. And it was amazing, because I tried listening to it on both devices, and it was like, whoa. So there's this big difference there.
The mid and MIDI is not supported. As I'm not, probably I might have to try, ask a suggestion to go to MIDI player directly and selecting it. Now apparently the MIDI devices are now becoming obsolete as USB is used instead of MIDI.
No, I mean MIDI files will work. I've got MIDI files of a standard tuned 6-string guitar, and that's what I use to tune my guitar a lot. Because I quite obviously can't use one of those little things that you attach to the neck and watch it. It'll tell you up or down or whatever. So I've got to tune it by ear, and I use the Braille note for that. And it plays them, but as Derek was saying, it's really quiet, and you can't restart the track or jump around it or anything. You just have to let it play to completion, or you have to exit and restart it that way. Correction, file, the directory option actually will play MIDI files. I just tried it, and it actually does, so sorry about that. But the rest of the issues still remain.
That must have just been fixed, though, because I tried that in, I think it was maybe 7.5. One of the other builds was 7.5, I think it was, and it didn't work. I don't know, though.
Oh, yeah, speaking of the virtual memory and Windows CE 6, the company who gets Windows CE 6 first will be a clear winner in Windows Mobile Arena. But the problem lies that the kernel itself is completely different. It is some rework, so key stuff has to be rewritten to take advantage of new features that are added. And even though the Pac-Man Omni says it is Mobile 6, it is actually CE 5.2, so technically it is still behind.
I noticed though that some of the mobile, like the mobile version and Windows CE version, are like one off. What's the numbering there? Between like CE and mobile.
The numberings were same. The CE 3.0 was Pocket PC 2002, although it was not called Windows Mobile 3.0 at that time. CE 4.0 was never discussed. CE 4.2 is Mobile 2003, 4.21 is Mobile 2003 second edition, and CE 5 is Windows Mobile 5. And CE 5.2 is Windows Mobile 6. So there we go.
Okay, why do they call it, why is 5.2 then Mobile 6? I don't get really right there.
Whenever they included a major version of mobile, and by the way, Windows Mobile and Windows CE are different things. CE is the base operating system, whereas the mobile is the interface. Whenever there's a major version of a software, the companies tend to move the version number up one by one. Even the difference between Windows Mobile 5 and 6. Mobile 5 is technically called Windows Mobile 2005, by the way. Is that Mobile 5 introduced the CE 5.0, and Mobile 6 introduced Windows Live integration, such as Windows Live Search, integration with Windows Vista, and so forth. That's why they renamed the Mobile 6 to match Vista's version number, which is 6.0 built 6000. Still, CE is CE 5.2. Same analogy with Burnout. What if we have CE 4.2, but in reality, whenever we talk about CE 4.2, everybody will get confused. So Microsoft names it Windows Mobile 2003.
Sorry to jump in here with a slightly different thing. I feel pretty stupid. I just did that 4.5.6 reset, and it seems to detach files all right now. Guess that was the problem.
Oh, cool. It's fixed.
One thing I will say, though, about 7, I think this has been ever since 7.2, come to think of it. Detaching files is the only place I've seen where it offers you a folder no matter what. In every other place, if the flash disk isn't your default drive, it prompts for a drive. Like if you were using your SD card, it'll say drive, press enter for SD card before folder. Only if you were using your flash disk last will it prompt you for a folder. Yet, it doesn't do that with email attachments. When you're detaching, it automatically prompts for a folder, no matter which drive you were just using. That can get pretty frustrating, because it just prompted me for folder name, press enter for none. When I hit backspace, though, there's no drive selected at all. It just says drive and then is blank. Not even Keysoft system disk, which you'd think would be the default after a 4.5.6 reset. So, that's a minor bug. More of an inconsistency than anything else, but...
Well, since we're on the subject of detaching files, the one thing I'd like to see is, you know, if they were going to do any enhancement to Keymail with regard to attachments, I'd like to see the option to attach or detach all files at once. Sorry about the phone ringing in the background there.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. I forgot what else I was going to say, but I agree with that completely. You get a whole bunch of attachments at once. It'd be great to be able to say, you know, you hit enter, or even if you could just mark them all. Speaking of marking, a few more enhancements I would love to see. In the subject, it tells you if it tells you if the email's marked. Like it says, subject, there are attachments, and then right after that, just say marked. So you don't have to space way down to see if you've marked it or not. Another thing would be sorting by groups. Like in Outlook, you can sort so that every same subject line with its replies is sorted into like a subcategory. So you can be going down the list, you'll see, you know, Braille Note, Keysoft question. There might be 50 replies, but you'll only see one message, and then there's a notification that if you hit enter on this, you'll get a whole bunch of messages with replies with that same message. That'd be really nice for sorting things, especially where, like people like me, I'm on, I think, 4 email forums, and it'd be great to be able to just delete by thread instead of by message.
Probably someone did suggest this, sorting, and also someone also suggested filtering in Keymail.
I remember that too. Was the one I wasn't in most of the time, but there was in last October. I think it was someone did mention filtering messages from a certain user. They have the full archive from October.
Yeah, it'd be great. You know, just go in, you add an email address or even a domain that you don't want to have emails come to you through, and it'll automatically put them into a separate, some default folder, junk or filtered emails, whatever, that you can just check periodically. But just to stop things, if you always have junk mail coming from a certain domain, then just put it in there and anything goes into your filtered instead of that. It'd also be nice not to have to free database space all the time. Braille Note's the only device I've ever seen where you have to do that for all databases. I don't know why, but on full Windows machines, on pretty sure the VoiceSense, the BrailleSense, on any others, you really don't have to do that. Not sure why you do on here, but...
What exactly is the free database space thing for?
when you delete emails, or in any database, when you delete records, basically, it erases them from the database, but it doesn't free up the space on the flash disk because the database still says, I need this much space to store this many records to Keysoft. But when you free database space in any sort of database, then the database will update itself and tell Keysoft, oh, I don't need space for this many records anymore, so you can have it back. And then that space is freed up for the user to use instead of for the database to have.
It'd be kind of nice maybe if they could do that automatically. Have it to where email, you delete an email and it's automatically freed.
Yeah, it would.
And you should do that, you should do that at least once a day to get optimum performance from Keymail. Because if this happens, if it's too many emails in trash, if you go over about 100 email in trash folder, you definitely need to do that to enhance the performance of Keymail. When the database space are freed, then the performance gets noticeably faster. And I also checked the GPS chat room and it seems that there's nobody there.
It's kind of strange. Maybe they're done already. As far as freeing database space goes, I noticed something kind of strange. It reports X number of bytes freed, but it always evenly divides by 1024. So basically, it's always a number of kilobytes that's exact. I mean, you'll never have, 20.41 kilobytes. It always divides evenly, 20K, 48K, whatever it is. Not quite sure why, but just sort of an interesting observation. It always is divisible into an even number of kilobytes. Don't know why, but...
It would also be nice to convert files like to MP3 and things like that, like for your memos.
I'd like to just record into MP3. Andrew Ridden a while ago was working on that. I don't know if he had it set up on the Braille Note or if he was doing it with some other device, but he emailed me, and I guess anyone else who responded to his on this message, some samples of what it sounded like recorded as MP3, and I thought they were really good. You started to run into the little problem that you have when you have sort of like a low-quality audio stream offline. You know, I've always thought of it sort of, not really underwater, but kind of bubbly in a way. That's not making much sense, but it's the only way I can describe it. I ran into a little bit of that with his recording as MP3, but other than that, it sounded great. It sounded even better, actually, than the WAV files do now. There wasn't that background hiss that is inherent in Braille Note. Speaking of that, though, I'd like to see that go away. I don't know if it's the microphone or the software, but it's really annoying. On things like even cell phones and cameras, that doesn't happen at all. It's a great quality. Yet on the Braille Note, which already costs you, $6,200 for a 32-cell unit, you get this horrible quality recording.
Probably the major benefits of MP3 would be a situation where you need to record something to a storage card that is less than 512 megabytes in size. Although, compared to WAV, if you're going to record it in CD quality, 44.1K hertz and 16-bit, it takes about 5 megabytes. But if you're going to use it in MP3, it only takes only 1 megabyte. So it's 5-to-1 ratio between WAV and MP3. And besides, in MP3 format, a user can choose a variety of the bit rates, all the way from 32 to all the way to like 256 bit rate. Between 24 and 320 bits per bit rate. And even selecting either 96 or 64, 96, 128, and 160 gives an amazing CD quality recording, with no hisses and no extraneous stuff added. And there was a suggestion on the first chat that someone said, we would like to see a better microphone, so that, quote, and someone also said, quote, they would like to see the case design where it would not block the microphone, end quote. Currently, the design of the case is such that it blocks the microphone, the actual microphone, and the microphone only records a memo and is highly directional for some odd reasons. It can pick up the sound from anywhere, but it sometimes has some limit where if you position yourself close about a feet between you and microphone, if a user positions him or herself such that the distance between the user and the microphone is about a feet, then it will pick up the user's voice. If you pick up the user's voice in high quality, but let's say if you turn the volume all the way up to like 30 decibels, and if you attempt to record something that is about 5 feet away, it will not detect it properly.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and the case really does need to be redesigned. I've almost lost a 1 gig SD card a few times, because in pulling the cover snugly over the Braille note so that it can Velcro securely, somehow it pushes on the SD card and it pops out. So when you open the case, the SD card starts sliding out of its little slot, and I've been lucky enough that it's somehow been held in there, because it's not an extremely loose fit. There's a little friction in there, and it's held it in just enough so that when I've gone to look, you know, maybe my GPS map didn't load or something like that, I've looked at the SD card and it's just hanging out there almost ready to fall out. If the Braille note is ever redesigned with a new motherboard, I'd really like to see the really sensitive slots on the side. To get rid of the PCM CIA, have two CF slots, the USB, and the SD all on the side. And then the serial, the infrared, and the dial-up modem in the back. But everything else really should be on the side, so it's easier to access. You can access it with the GPS pouch on. All you'd have to do is unvelcro the right side instead of taking off the whole thing, and like this is happening, you don't get your SD cards falling out.
The other day, Robert Kavanaugh sent me a private message speculating that would it be possible to combine the Classic and the Empower. My response and opinion is that you cannot really combine them, because if you put parallel ports into the Empower itself, not only the unit will get extremely wide, but you also are risking the serial port and the USB port, which, especially for USB port, which has been pretty useful. And if you take it out, then there's no point of buying a USB device because there's no such port for it. And speaking of the infrared, I've been always advocating that we have an infrared data transfer capability, so we can send and receive information from a device that has infrared port on it, simply lining on it, and then sending a device from the Braille note and receiving a file on the Braille note. Typically, you can download to downloads folder, and it'll be accessible from anywhere.
Are you saying you can do that, or you like that feature?
You cannot do that at this point.
Speaking of file sharing and stuff like that, though, is it CE? Like, would a CE upgrade help for us to be able to have a Braille note show up as a network computer on a network? Like, when you go to My Network Places in Windows, it gives you all the computers that are on that network, but you can't get the Braille note to show up as one of those. That'd be really nice if you could. Also, if you could use ad hoc, so that you can be on an ad hoc network with other PDAs and laptops and stuff, and you can all share files back and forth, because right now the Braille note will not do it at all. You can set it up, it'll detect it, it'll log on to it, it'll connect to it, and all that, but whenever you go to network, it won't let you find any network device. Like it says, I can't remember what it says right now, but where you type in your computer's name that you want to access files on, if you type in anything, even if it's the name of a computer on the ad hoc network, it's not going to do it.
First question, no. Second question, yes. partially. The networking feature is only available for regular Windows version. Even Windows CE 6.0 does not support it. You cannot really have Burnout show up as a network computer. Although, if you use Moon's Mobile Device Center under Vista, Burnout will show up as a drive, just like other storage devices. The other thing, the ad hoc network, it will probably work best with PDAs, but not with laptop computers, unless it has a Bluetooth object exchange or infrared transfer capabilities.
So even a CE upgrade isn't going to let me share files between, like I was at a situation this summer where I had my PC, everyone was talking to a central router. I had my PC and I think three or four other laptops all in the same few offices, and I could have had the Braille Note be able to move files around on any of those had it supported the ad hoc network that we had set up. But quite obviously it can't do it, and that would have been really helpful because I was in charge of editing some of the stuff, and I could have just put that on another computer to print, to have other people look at and format, and then to print it. But I had to use a thumb drive, or we had to eventually switch to another computer because my PC has Microsoft Works, which wasn't working, and it's a bit of a long story, but anyway, ad hoc would have been extremely helpful. So you're saying a CE upgrade isn't going to let us do that no matter what?
It won't, unfortunately. Although you can use the existing network capabilities to do it. The exception would be if the computer has Bluetooth, either Bluetooth antenna or a Bluetooth dongle. And if PCs are showing up on the Bluetooth devices, and if this PC can see Burnout as a Bluetooth device, potential Bluetooth device, and if Bluetooth object exchange is enabled, then yes, it can do that. Same as infrared. Network, partially, because it needs, the PCs must be linked as either a domain or as a workgroup before it can be enabled.
Alright, that makes sense. Even Bluetooth, though, is going to require CE upgrade to give us object exchange and audio support.
The audio support would benefit a lot of people, especially for those who want to carry an external speaker with Bluetooth on it. That way, the user doesn't have to rely on the Burnout's speaker. Rather, he or she can rely on a Bluetooth headset or Bluetooth headphones to listen to Burnout's speech. Tom, do you have any other comments? In case you don't know, do you guys want the debugger log file? Any other comments?
Sorry, you know what, when we were talking about mail attachments and all that kind of stuff, I got a phone call, and so I had to bow out for a little bit. Did I miss anything?
We covered Braille Note not being able to support ad hoc networks or show up as a network place, a network drive on Windows, as well as a CE upgrade being required for Bluetooth to use audio, like to send audio through its Bluetooth to an audio headset or speaker or something, and object exchange, plus the infrared data transfer, which would allow us to send files back and forth between devices using the infrared port, and redesigning the Braille Notes, both the plastic shell and the leather case, so that a lot of the cards and things aren't on the back anymore. They'd be on the right side, because I was pointing out that a lot of times my SD card will start falling out because of the way the case closes. I think that's it. Someone else, tell me if I missed anything.
That all sounds good to me.
And there was mini support too.
Probably. My addition would be to upgrade the processor. Although the current processor is pretty useful, but for doing intensive tasks such as recording an MP3 and high power application, it would be a good idea to upgrade the process to at least 624 megahertz, although risking some power settings. And CE upgrade, other than that, that's fine.
If you're going to have a motherboard upgrade, there are a few things. Your processor, as you were saying, but also the RAM, the flash disk, both should be dramatically increased. And your, I'm missing something. Oh yeah, a minor redesign of all the cards and such, so that the case doesn't affect anything.
And if you're going to do that, put the ability to record in stereo.
Yeah, because someone on the Brunet list today did mention they had a stereo mic, and I wonder if their Brunet would work with it.
The reason? The Brunet only supports recording in the mono format. Even the FM radio will be recorded in the mono format. That's the big disadvantage, in my opinion.
Say again?
The reason is that Brunet only supports recording in mono. So stereo will not work.
Something else too to add to the list, I forgot about this until just now, but maybe some improved support for how media files are handled, really, in general, because what would be some things here, like things like for instance, if you have a playlist or whatever, sometimes it kind of cuts into things or out of things, and it I don't know if it really makes much sense, but yeah.
You're talking about like when a media file stops, it'll cut out speech and then blank the Braille display.
No, I mean sometimes, like when you're playing, for instance, a playlist, maybe an MP3 of your playlist, it can sometimes kind of between the beginning and end of a media file that can kind of jump in and jump out a little bit. The sound kind of. Sometimes the quality isn't as good with that.
Never noticed that, but one of the things I'd like to see is a universal hotkey for jumping around playlists, because right now you have to switch into the media player. Also for stopping a track, like if you're in file manager / directory, it doesn't let you stop a media file automatically. You have to switch into it, and right now there's no hotkey for switching back to directory.
Yep, that's the thing that we discussed yesterday, to create a hotkey for file directory option, and also to reorganize the file manager menus that reflects the current technology. Also to create the universal command for copying it, because currently for copying a one-liner, you have to press Ctrl-C or Control-C or backspace K. If you need to copy a file, it's Control-Y or backspace Y. If it is still Control-K or Control-C or backspace K, then it is universal, so it can be understood as copying. But since there's no universal command for copying, that might confuse some potential users, who they thought control backspace K was the universal copy command, and they learned that to copy a file, control backspace Y would be the command to use.
Also, see something that was mentioned yesterday for the newer users was creating an association option. Either that or having it like a menu for a file, kind of like a context menu for Windows, for like an open with, you know, that sort of thing. Because I know it's for me, like for things like games or things like that I'm messing around with a lot, you can't just push enter on a game file and open it in file manager directory. So you have to switch out of that and then go back into games interpreter, and if you're not running anything, you have to, if it's in a different place, select a different drive and directory and all that stuff, and go to the game you want.
Going along with that, full multitasking would be a lot easier. But I think Joseph was saying they'd have to divide it so that Keysoft.exe doesn't control everything. You'd have to have individual apps for every program. You'd have to have individual application files. But it sure would be nice. But right now, I'm not even sure the processor will take it.
Also, you have to note that there is a 32 process limit on CE42. And just as I said earlier, besides virtual memory, if we upgrade to CE6, then we get to load unlimited number of programs. So you can up to 30,000 programs on the CE6. So if you create each, currently what it does is that whenever applications like keyword or key plan is run, it runs in a somewhat thread-like portion. So each task is like a thread, except KSW Media and IE. A good idea would be to upgrade CE6 and then redesign KeySoft so that each program resides in its own section of the program, or create a create program files for each program so that we can have independent control of each program. This will also be useful for running third-party software. Since they're in their own programming image, they can just interact with one of the programs rather than interacting with the whole keysoft.exe, which is around 2.3 megabytes these days.
Keysoft.exe is?
Yes, from what I've heard, it is. From what I've seen last night, it is 2.36 megabytes in size.
Something I also wonder too. I wonder why is the why is nk.bin so big? I mean, I might be missing something because I know I was looking at, for instance, the Keysoft system disk, and it would seem that only there's only like maybe one or so megabyte Windows is using. So like, why is nk.bin so large?
The cheap reason is that BIN is the binary image of the entire ROM image. Not only the in the binary file, not only the files related to keys of system disk and flash disk will be stored, but the entire sectors of the ROM image, as well as configuration information, the bootloader image, and not the bootloader image. Bootloader image stored in eboot.bin. The boot sector and so forth will be inside. So that's why it's too large. So I like to rephrase that. Beside nk.bin stores not just files related to Keysoft system disk and flash disk, but also it stores configuration settings, boot sector, and all the sectors in the ROM image. The reason why nk.bin is large, the reason why the NK file for Empower Solution and Flat Classic is because the Empower has more ROM image space than Classic.
Ah.
Are there other things to throw out?
I was wondering, why does Eloquence, I know Eloquence does support French and other things like that, but how come that isn't tied into the multilingual options? Because you can use... Ugh. Eloquence sometimes does pop up with a French accent. Which would be kind of funny sometimes, but... They don't... Keysoft doesn't really allow... like, French or Spanish or, Italian or not to be used with Eloquence, really.
There is a file called... .syn syn file, that is the synthesizer file for Eloquence. There are two of them, French.syn and English.syn. And the fact that Eloquence uses more memory than expected, about 1.5 megabytes more than Kino Gold, it is advisable that it has only English and French rather than including all five languages, which are English, French, Spanish, Italian, German. If they have those five languages, it will take about 2-3 megabytes of RAM when run together. And it will also take up some space in ROM because it should have more SYN file for each of the three languages, German, Italian, and Spanish. Although I agree with the notion that if we have multilingual version of eloquence with all five languages, including English, then we don't have to use Keynote Gold for that. We can just use the pronunciation that is familiar to JAWS users when using language detection option.
Ah, so that's wrong, because Keynote Gold is cool and all, but I've been with eloquence a lot more, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. Keynote Gold, the speech managers are... English is the biggest one at 553K. The rest are between, looks like 160 and 180. Which explains why they don't take enough RAM to really make a difference. If they could just get eloquence to pare down its RAM use a little bit, then we'd be all set.
Mainly because of the usage of WAV files.
Yeah, it's probably part of it, but it's just generally sluggish. Don't really know why, but it takes about a quarter second to a half second to respond to any keystroke or anything, and it can't keep track with fast typing or the succession.
It would also be nice, too, to have support for .move files, like QuickTime, like .mov. You know, people are like, for some odd reason, people like love to use that format. Even sometimes if it isn't video, you know, I found several things in .mov or whatever.
Yeah, I found the same thing. I mean, if Braille can do WMV, why not MOV? I've gotten Windows Media Player to play on before, so it's not like it's not going to be unsupported. It's probably going back to the OGG thing where you just need a codec for it.
Then why does it support WMV?
Because there's native support for it in the version of Windows Media Player Mobile that we have. I'll bet if there was a CE upgrade, then it would be. If not supported, I'll bet it would at least be able to be supported.
Ah, cool. And it seems, too, like a lot of the main ideas here really need a CE upgrade.
That's what the majority people are saying now, that it is time to upgrade to CE6 to take advantage of those features that we just discussed over the chat that we've done. It seems that it's almost 6:20 right now on my time.
Well, either CE6 or Linux.
Yeah, I think in CE6 though, because Linux would require us, not us, but would require HW to rewrite, basically write from the ground up, absolutely every aspect of Keysoft all over again, because they'd have to use Linux now instead of Windows, even though Linux is more stable, so I've heard anyway. But if Humanware does go to CE6 right now, like within the next few months, if we had with 6.1 and, was 7? Yeah, anyway. Then it'll be the only blindness PDA that uses CE6, so it'll finally be ahead in the game instead of being sadly behind as it seems to have fallen over the last few years.
I didn't have a Braille Note when they had Keysoft 6.1. or whatever, the upgrade to CE. So does that just to upgrade CE, is that just like a new installing a new upgrade for Keysoft? Is that basically how you do it, or is there some kind of like special process or thing?
No, same thing. They gave me 6.1 on one CF card, and then you just did. That was actually the first time that we'd ever had to do a reset with 4.5. That was the first introduction of it, was with 6.1, and you just did it once, and then it upgraded. It basically automatically went through two upgrade processes, if I'm remembering correctly. The first one upgraded CE, and then the second one put the new Keysoft on top of the new CE. It also took two SMA counts, because, I mean, that makes sense. You know, it was taking two software versions, basically, instead of one Keysoft version. You were taking one Keysoft and one CE, so you had to have, the company had to make its money somehow. It was basically the same upgrade process as normal.
Okay, because I was around, I came into the bundle when they had pretty much just released Keysoft 7.0. Build 22, because before that I had a Berlin speak with, like, December 3,
1999. Yeah, so that I had a Braille note since 2002, so I think Keysoft 3 point something. I don't know. I remember them upgrading my motherboard, and I got it back with Keysoft 4.02. And then I installed my own 5, and then from then on I've installed them by myself. 6 was the only one that was mailed to me via snail mail. Everything else I've just downloaded. I can't even remember, actually, how we installed Keysoft before 6.
You just ran the Keysoft 5.1, Keysoft installation file for a particular serial number from the application program and the utilities. So since upgrading to CE6, it might be, but I might be wrong. My hypothesis is that since the RAM memory will be upgraded, then we can just use the same method that we used, possibly with the future eBoot upgrade to upgrade the bootloader to support the new kernel, and then upgrade the ROM image from there.
It would be nice if the bundle could support more media for upgrading. I mean, not just more card sizes, but more cards, because you know, for me, I mean, that was the first time I bought an SD card just recently. It was for an upgrade. A lot of people, like, some people with muscular type disorders have to have someone help them put the card in. You know, it's, like, really, really small. You know? But it's, like, things like the PK, which is really nice. You can upgrade from a compact flash card, which I already had one before, but it didn't work. Because I have an Empower, you know.
Yeah, I think that it would be, I mean, whether this would actually work or not, I don't know, but I think it would be it would be a very nice feature if you could, when you do the upgrade, run it from a bigger size card, you know, whether it be SD or flash, it doesn't matter, but, you know, the fact that you have to keep at the very least a 512 SD card or flash card, depending on which device, which one you have, just for upgrades, when you could use the same, you know, when you could use, you know, any sized card to upgrade and not worry about, you know, is this going to work or do I have to buy a smaller size or bigger sized card, you know. Just because, and in my opinion, I don't see what the difference is between using a 512 SD card than, you know, or using a 2 gig SD card. You know, I just don't see what the difference is. I mean, you know, I just don't understand. I mean, you know, my friend, for instance, had to go to the store, you know, like Best Buy or whatever, and buy a 512 SD card just to upgrade her Braille note so she could have Keysoft 7.5. And, you know, I don't think that's, you know, right. I think you should be able to take the stuff you have on your card, temporarily move it someplace, upgrade your Keysoft, and then put the stuff back on it when you're done with it. I think it's ridiculous that you have to go through all that trouble to find a bigger sized card, you know, or a smaller sized car just to upgrade. That's just my humble opinion, and I'll stick to it.
Although, I think, I'm not sure, but I think, something with technology or something changes when it gets bigger than 512. I don't know, though. And about moving your files off of an SD card, I was actually able to, because I use the 512 SD card for other things too. So I was able to move the other files on the SD card into a different folder, into a subfolder, and to just put mk.bin in the NUN directory, and it worked. So.
But how'd you format it? I mean, when you format, everything's erased. Unless you formatted it before and then have used it since. But I never take any chances personally. I just format every single time. As far as the reason, though, as far as I know, it's a hardware thing. Basically, the Braille Note isn't going to be able to look at... the MPower isn't going to be able to look at a compact flash card and say, all right, is there NK.bin on here? And if there is, it's not going to upgrade to it. It has to use the SD card because of how it boots. And it has to be a certain size SD card because of Windows CE. I don't know if a CE upgrade will remove that limitation or not. I mean, I agree completely, though. If my mom hadn't given me an old 512 card from a camera that she'd bought, then I would have been out of luck. I would have hadn't gone out and found one, and I'm not too sure. I mean, I know where I could find them, but it's sort of ridiculous now because for only a little bit more than you can get a 512, you can start to get the 1 or the 2 gigs, especially offline. So it's, you know, you buy your SMA, they don't tell you you're going to have to buy another $30 card to install it. None of that, but as I said, I don't know if a CE upgrade will take care of it. I hope it does, because I'd really love to see that limitation removed.
I have several theories of my own. Since it is bootloader related, probably the bootloader upgrade would fix it. And since the probably the most nagging limit would be the cluster size. The BIN and other image files usually use 2048 characters per cluster, as opposed to typical 4096 characters per cluster. Probably that's why they're using 512 megabyte as a limit for those cards.
I wonder though, if the cluster size does it, then why wouldn't formatting back to FAT16 as the Prepare SD Card for Upgrade program does? Why wouldn't that just rewrite the clusters on the card so that it can write it fine, and then Braille Note can use it? I mean, it shouldn't really matter which size it is, as long as it can format it back to FAT16. Unless I'm really misunderstanding something here, and if so, please tell me. But as far as I know, then the FAT formatting to FAT16 would write cluster size, if indeed that is the deciding factor.
Any other things?
I think I may have sent an email. I don't remember. I think I sent an email to the list about this, but it's really getting about time for me to send my bullet into humor to get the battery replaced and the build spickling and all that stuff, because I haven't sent it at all. It's been like I got it maybe in like February 2006, but the battery life's getting really short, and like every cell on the display almost has a dot that's at least one dot that's not coming up right. I was wondering, for one, is there a place other than New Zealand I can ship it to, closer to the south? And two, like, how does all that work? You know, this is my first time. What all do you have to do for that? You know, that sort of thing.
You're just gonna put it back in your box. You call the HumanWare office. 1-800-722-3393. Talk to customer service and tell them you've got to send it in for a cleaning and a battery replacement. They'll tell you how much it's going to cost. Then you give them your credit card number, or, you know, the credit card number of whichever company, of whichever account you're going to be using. Put your Braille Note back into the box, and then you mark it up with the address and everything that you have to send it to. They tell UPS. UPS comes and picks it up, takes it off to Concord, California. They do whatever it is they do, you know, take it apart, give every Braille pin an ionic bath, as one person put it for me, replace your battery and all that stuff. And once they're done, normally it's, I think, 3 to 6 weeks is the average. Though sometimes it can be as little as a week, sometimes longer. They'll send it back to you. And normally you're all set, though sometimes I've had problems. One time I had it back, my Bluetooth didn't seem to be connected, it wouldn't come on. I've heard of people getting them back and, you know, their Braille displays don't work, or just strange things happen that HumanWare should have found, but they didn't. I'm not quite sure what's going on with their quality control, but it's not for this discussion. But that's basically all there is to it. And then you have to suffer without your Braille note for that long, which I hate doing, which is why I haven't sent mine in. I got it about a year ago, actually, roughly to the month, I think, maybe even to the week, about a year ago. Haven't sent it in yet, but...
Yeah, and guys. Hi, whoever who joined us, Nightmare, welcome.
Cool. That's to make sure I can back up my flash disk. I can, like, play all the stuff on it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I've never lost data. But you always want to do that before you send it away or do anything like that.
I swear it would be nice to have USB 3.0. I'm not really sure if I'm getting this the right topic or not here, but why is the Braille note, for instance, if you download a file, why is it so slow? I mean, because the PC, you can go download maybe a 29 megabyte file. If you're on a fast connection, you can maybe go download it in maybe a couple minutes. But if you're on a Braille note, it might take you up to maybe 15, 20 plus minutes to download that. Like, you know, is there a, you know, why does it do that?
Then you're getting into the processor and the RAM and stuff, which is part of the reason. I'd like to see it upgraded, and I think Joseph said up to at least 624 megahertz, because the file can come into the Braille note as fast as you could want. You know, it could be 10 megs a second, but the problem is, as soon as it hits the Braille note, it's like it reaches a point. The processor can't process the information, which includes getting it from the web server, and then going through RAM, and then putting it onto whichever device, your flash disk, your USB drive, you know, whichever storage medium you're using at the time. And that's the choke point, really, is when it hits the Braille note's processing power, everything slows way down.
Also, there have been several times where, like, for instance, if you're downloading, for instance, a game, like I tried to download, just as an example, I tried downloading Superlium, which is a game by Elleworks, but yeah, anyway. The file is like, it's an EXE file, it's about 90 megs, roughly, maybe 89 or so. And I found I have to download a lot of EXE files twice, because the first time the Braille note corrupts the headers, you try transferring it, and it says, it comes up with the DOS box for maybe a split second saying, program too big to fit in memory. Because I guess, I looked it up, and I guess it's, I think it's an MZ header, I think. And if it doesn't have that, Windows will treat it like a MS-DOS program and give it a 64, I think it's a 64 KB chunk, whereas it's obviously too small, you know? So, can that be fixed maybe in a future upgrade to where it doesn't, you have to download a file twice? There's that too, and I figured out it, for a file that does that, it names them MZP, as in Mike, Zulu, can't think of a good P word at the moment, but anyway, that too, and it does not show that there are .exe files, it just shows MZP, and then it can let you have several MZPs there at once, it doesn't care. So, you know.
Yeah, I noticed the MZP thing, and I thought that'd be fixed, but it hasn't. I even downloaded KeyView from the HumanWare website, and it showed up as an MZP. If you hit space with I, it gives you accurate information. It says application size, the proper size and everything. But for some reason, it just doesn't like to display some app names. Sometimes it'll do it fine, sometimes it won't at all, and that gets really annoying because you can't manage any programs. You know, if you download a few on the Braille node, and then you go to move them off to your network or anything like that, you have to use a PC to view them, otherwise you'll have no idea what they are. I was going to say something else. I can't remember what it was. I hate that.
And for me too, even when I transfer them to a PC, they show up as key something.exe. It might key, for instance, key1.exe or key2. So, there's that too. I don't know why it does that.
Never had that happen. As soon as the PC gets hold of them, everything's treated fine. But it's just on the Braille note that it does. It says MZP for some reason. It's done that, I think. I think it's always done that, actually. At least in 6.11.
That's the thing for me, too, is that I transferred it to my PC. And, like, I couldn't find it. It would show up as key 1. And I was like, what's this key 1 thing? And, like, I opened it, I had to launch a DOS box from the run prompt to actually see that it was too big. Like, I go through this big thing about trying to figure out memory sizes and trying to expand it, which I couldn't, and I was like, you know, what's going on here? Then I found that blog is like saying you only get 64 kilobytes of memory for an MS-DOS program.
Yeah, I have noticed the problems that you're saying, not the DOS part, but you were saying you have to download things twice sometimes. I've definitely noticed that. It'll EXE files, and I don't know why, I don't know what the Braille node's got against EXEs, but it doesn't seem to like to do it. By the way, just a general piece of knowledge if anyone hasn't seen the posts before. Well, it doesn't always work, but normally, at least as of KeySoft 7.2, if you're downloading a big file and you don't want to have it just download and sit there, because as we're saying, we can't do multitasking, instead of hitting space with E, hit space with Z, and it'll say fail to download, but it'll keep downloading in the background, and sometimes you'll get the whole thing. Normally you get the whole thing, sometimes it might corrupt it. So I don't recommend it for downloading, you know, upgrades or EXEs or something like that, but if you're just downloading a big text file or a music file or something, then it seems to work really well. As I said, I don't know what the...
Well, that's kind of weird. I couldn't get the control key to work, because like, it wouldn't do anything at all. It's just, yeah.
So mine did yesterday. Glad to know I didn't break his keyboard after all.
Huh. Although I found it never seemed to have to download a product key twice for KeySoft.
Yeah, really little files seem to work really well, but as soon as you get into a few megs or more, not so much. Then you can never tell if it's going to work or if it's not going to work until you actually try and run it.
Any other things to discuss? If there's none, then I guess we call for the night.
What time is that KeySoft presentation tomorrow? Isn't it 7 Eastern?
It'll be 5 Pacific. Everything is PM except the next two, the last two items. 5 PM Pacific, 6 Mountain, 7 Central, 8 Eastern, 0 GMT, 1 o'clock AM UK on Tuesday, and Australia is 10 AM Tuesday, New Zealand is 12 PM on Tuesday. It'll be held at the Accessible World Tech Talk Room. Go to www.accessibleworld.org, if I'm correct. Then go to enter the Tech Talk Room. You'll encounter the same thing that you encountered in Blanco Tech Room, where it says Talcom is a little piece of little software. Press go to click enter link. Or perhaps if it has a download button, then you can go to click here to enter the room. Type your name, and press enter and you'll be in. There is no limit of 25 people in that room, so unlimited people can join us tomorrow. And if anybody wants it, I'm planning on hosting another bonus chat after the tech talk session is over, when Humor is around, so we can ask questions to Mike Gibson and Dan Brown, who will be representing Humor tomorrow for about an hour, from 7 Pacific to 8 Pacific.
Under the demon, they're having the chat. They're having the presentation at 8. Like at 8 p.m. Pacific, or Dean, we're having our backup chat at 8 p.m.
The bonus is for 7 p.m. Pacific, right after the Tech Talk session, and it'll be continuing where the Tech Talk left off and where we left off today, and where we left off today. And since HumanWare will be around at that time, then we can ask direct our questions to HumanWare staff. And maybe we can discuss other things when a lot of people are around. So that can create two things at once. We can direct questions to HumanWare, and we can have many more participants.
We can talk again too about the SDK. that was a big thing too for people that didn't join us yesterday, was pushing really the SDK issue. For tomorrow's chat.
Probably. So I'm going to combine the topics that we discussed yesterday and topics that we discussed today, as well as the continuation of topics that we're going to discuss on Monday.
It's kind of strange. It won't let me use the control key, but it will let me use Alt-L. I don't know what deals with that.
I ran into that yesterday, except... No, I couldn't get the thing unlocked. Not sure why that's happening, but yeah, I'll stay for a chat afterward. I don't have much else to do. I don't have a class tomorrow until 1:40 or something like that. So Tuesday rather, until like 1:40 in the afternoon. I really want to know though why the Braille Note no longer speaks contractions, because it'll be up to, you know, 5 or 6 characters behind speaking, because it wants to speak every single dot you write if it's not a letter or a common punctuation mark.
I haven't had that problem over here. I don't know, that might just be my unit.
Are you in UEB or grade 2, though?
UEB. Actually, I really like UEB. So I normally have it set on UEB, but, yeah. Still kind of learning the different, like, some of the different symbols, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, UEB's been really helpful. I didn't think I'd like it at first, because I'd gotten so used to using 8-dot computer Braille, but it's almost more flexible as far as as far as a lot of math symbols go. Really growing to enjoy it here. But as I said, if you type a left parenthesis, which is dot 5 with dots 1, 2, 6, instead of using a little software and figuring out that as soon as you hit that 1, 2, 6 immediately after you hit the dot 5 and saying left paren or left parenthesis, whatever you have it set on, it still says dot 5, dot 1, dot 5, dots 1, 2, 5, 1, 2, 6. It does that with almost everything. The is, instead of the, as soon as you hit it, it's dots 2, 3, 4, 6, and it really starts to get old after a while. I wonder if eloquence will make a difference, though, now that I think about it.
Probably is assuming that all Braille files are UEB files, and that is attempting to speak out the actual symbol that is doing it, that is, in fact, is a contraction for a word or an abbreviation for a word.
Yeah, just tried it with eloquence. It does the same thing, as you said, probably would. But it gets really frustrating. I mean, it gets old after a while. Instead of just saying the, has to say all the dots. And when you have a few of those in a row, maybe a few punctuation symbols and then a few contractions, it gets way, way behind, and it's just ridiculous because you don't even know where it is anymore. But I'm rambling on about that. I'll just ask them tomorrow.
Yep. And by the way, just for a tip, the first hour is going to be their own, the HumanWare's hour, where they're going to do some keys of 7.5 stuff. After that, we have a question session, Q&A session for presenters. Maybe that then we can ask about this problem and another number of the things that we discussed yesterday, such as memory issue, the UEB, error, exception error, email detachment, error messages, error 11001, error 451, and so forth, and other things. And then, when we do the bonus chat, then we can throw out our suggestions and see the human responses for that.
Sounds good to me. That's the third time I was going to say something, but I don't remember what it was. The 7.5 presentations might shed some light on some of the things that are currently not working. I mean, maybe there are some workarounds that they have, or maybe... I don't know, just it might present some information that we might not be aware of, or that'll help get around some of these things.
Hey, speaking of UEB, is there any reference information about UEB? I've never really used it. I kind of fiddled with it a little bit yesterday, but I have no idea what some of the symbols are and, you know, what the main differences are between that and... U.S. literary braille. So I'm wondering where some reference material is that I might be able to read to sort of help me get familiar with UEB.
Yeah, Google is actually surprisingly unhelpful. I tried that. It didn't work. What I've ended up doing is just switching the braille note into UEB and then hitting backspace with 3.5, and that brings up the UEB symbol table list, or whatever it calls them, even.
UEB symbol table list.
Oh, I'm good. And then you've got a whole bunch of, I don't know if you guys can hear the braille note, but...
letters and numbers. Accents. 23. Punctuation symbols. Other symbols. Typeforms. Symbols for the transcriber. Miscellaneous indicator symbols. Numbers. Pointage and measurement symbols. Operation and comparison signs. Fractions, roots, superscripts, and subscripts. Miscellaneous mathematical symbols. Spatial arrangement symbols. Read letters. Set theory of logic symbols, shape symbols, matrix and vector symbols, arrow symbols, symbols for chemistry and engineering, symbols for programming, symbols used in horizontal line mode, end of list.
So you got all those. I hope you guys heard those. And aside from miscellaneous mathematical operators, you can just look through any of those and it'll tell you, like, for example,
symbols used in horizontal line mode, list of symbols used, begin horizontal line mode, .5, .25.
That's exactly what it says on the braille display. Begin horizontal line mode. And then it has a little .46, .123456, which must be some sort of indicator thing. I don't know. But right after that, it has .5 and then .25 actually shown on the display, immediately followed by .5, .25 written out, if this is making any sense at all. That's the way I'm learning it, is just by looking through, finding the symbol I want, and then trying to figure out, does this work, memorize it. You know, you can also insert it. If I hit enter right now, it'll insert that, but I'm at the main menu, so it won't do me any good. But that's the best reference I found, is just to look at the table itself and follow what it says.
It's 3 minutes till the official thing is over. So any last minute comments?
Sorry, could you say that again? You're it sounds like you're really far away from your microphone for some reason.
Meaning because I was eating. It's about 2 minutes now up to the end of the official thing. Are there any last minute comments? Well, hearing none, I guess everybody's satisfied with today's chat.
Can you repeat the last thing there?
Sorry about that. I don't know, for some reason, my microphone does not pick me anymore. Well, it did now. So I guess today was a bit more productive than yesterday's. The record was 9 people, folks, today. The same people from yesterday was here, except Tom Lynch, who came in today. In summary, today's chat was more productive than yesterday, although we discussed more things in detail, starting from email detachment issue to benefits of CE 6.0, download issues, hardware changes, and blur display issues, and many things. Those things that we discussed yesterday, and those things that we discussed today. And I'm sure that tomorrow, when Humor is doing the Accessible World presentation, I'm sure there'll be more topics that will be discussed, and there'll be more questions that we didn't cover today. I'm sure that tomorrow, many people from Burnoutless, as well as people from other lists who are interested about Bruno could attend their meeting tomorrow. And my opinion is, and my hope is that they will learn something more about KeySub, not just from a documentation, but from practical approach. And allowing us the chance to, the veterans to have a chance to ask the HumanBird staff the actual thing of KeySub 7.5 is, in my opinion, pretty useful. So I'm sure that many people will attend tomorrow's chat, actual tech talk training session, in the bonus chat after that, when whoever is around, to ask all sorts of questions, everything from bug reports to product suggestions.
Also something too, I looked on the Blind Geek Zone site, and I could not find the third unofficial Burnout chat. Although I would like to compliment, though, I did find the Burnout podcast part 5. It was really cool. So, yeah.
I have to ask Rick Harmon tonight to see what he's done with the third chat. Technically, this is the fourth chat. And official, this is the third one, but I renamed it fourth chat, for clarity. The options menu part that I'm recording will be the official third part 3 of my Burnout podcast. So those will be the Bluetooth display, support info, and upgrading all the supplements to the actual thing.
Just so you know, Joseph. Now you're incredibly close to your microphone. It's sort of getting distorted, like you're breathing into it and stuff, and it's kind of getting everything distorted, as I said. Just, I guess, back away from the mic a little bit. Boy, that sounds kind of strange. But
sorry about that. So I'll repeat again that the Pro Display, the support info, and the upgrade were the 3 supplements to the actual main part. The options menu will be the third part of the main Burnout chat. No, not technically, the Burnout podcast, actually.
Last minute, I liked part 5, though. It was really cool. Actually, that's the first one I've heard so far, is part 5.
So, that's the end. Hearing none regarding to today's chat, I'd like to really thank everybody for joining us. The peak was at 9 people. We discussed many things that we didn't discuss yesterday, and we discussed more things and things that we discussed yesterday. Just like tradition, I'm going to upload the part 4 podcast on the Blind Geek Zone website. It will be recorded, unlike last time, it will be uploaded probably tomorrow night, right after the Tech Talk training. because I'm going to record the bonus chat as a part 3. This is part 2, folks. Part 3 of the 4th burnout chat. And upload all 3 parts. And unlike tradition, I'm going to upload the bonus chat as to the blank code tech website. And I'm going to count the bonus chat as the official 4th burnout chat. So, thank you everybody for joining us today, for another one of those productive chats since the second chat. So this calls the official close of the burnout chat, at least the recording part of it. So thanks for joining me today.
Nice.